Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Yeah, I'm back.
Oh yeah, we're all back. I'm Morgan Nicol, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, lacking creative tagline.
I didn't have time to think about it.
I just failed to do so.
You had hours to think while I was messing around with audio cables.
There were a couple that ran through my head and I discarded them all momentarily before I said that, which was probably a bit shit too.
So a few things.
I was going to go corporate apologist, but I had no reason to say that.
We've had some things change this week. Number one, we are now recording on Wednesday nights. We're still releasing on Thursday, and that means that we should be one day closer to not out of date.
It's now much less likely that we'll say something about some exciting news event only to have it completely 180 degree turnaround by the time the podcast is heard by most of the people who listen to it.
Yeah. It's occurred to me, this streaming thing, that we can no longer talk about, you know, stuff.
Oh, the stuff that we're not allowed to talk about and then beep it out for the podcast.
Yeah. Bill and Ben, yeah, and P-Money and so on.
That's a problem.
Or, you know, whatever. I'm just picking people at random, obviously.
Absolutely.
We've also changed some of our audio equipment, so Dylan should sound much crisper and cleaner.
Do I sound quite good now? Is that okay?
If we were to get, you know, a random caller,
that'd probably sound about the same as they always did.
Which, I mean, nothing's changed there, but... Oh, yeah, it's Wednesday, says the chat room. Oh, yeah, it's Wednesday. So now people are going to be late for things that they used to do on Wednesdays because Discourse hadn't happened, it must be Tuesday.
What it is you'll also find yourself sitting in front of the TV on Tuesday night going, I don't usually see this show. Why don't I see this show?
Yeah.
And then you'll realize it's because you're too busy listening to Discourse intently.
What TV happens on Tuesday? For some
reason,
I don't know.
How would I know?
How would you know? Ben's still fired.
Yeah.
That's official.
Yeah, no. I mean,
he's more fired than ever. More fired than ever. Good news, though, we're probably going to have senior Raglan correspondent and surfing commentator, Robin Gallagher. She's possibly going to be back as of next week. So we're getting,
that's exciting.
We're getting the actual pro crowd back together.
We need some more other contributors as well. We need to get some more of our senior something or other correspondents involved. What's happened to senior theology correspondent?
I think he was actually always philosophy correspondent.
Was he?
Although I guess he probably did double duty, if you know what I mean. Double duty. Some people know what I mean when I say double duty.
Should I look this up for Urban Dictionary Word of the Week?
I don't know if you should or not. We need to get probably two more regulars, and we need to make it so that sometimes I don't produce.
Fair enough.
That would be great, because I'm going away in a little while, for quite a while, and it would be, you know.
Oh, you found guilty after all of that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Double duty, when it goes, oh, fucking hell. No, looking that up in Urban Dictionary was the wrong choice.
Yeah.
Just never mind.
Urban Dictionary is basically the end of sanity. Stay away from there. You know what else is bad? I've decided we're going to start some new segments. We started another, you know, the first one last week. I don't know what it's called yet, but it's Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so...
And the other thing that I'm starting is coming up in a little bit. You're going to find out about that very shortly. And I hope you like it. I hope you like it. It's hit or miss. But, you know, this is the clean show. You know, it's not dirty. So this is going to be clean. It's going to be a clean bit.
Is this Matters Arising? Can I bring something up?
Yes.
The nice people from Adobe, well, actually they're publicists, contacted me to tell me that there's a CS... I know a lot of people who listen to this show do things in the creative mediums, Photoshop-y type things,
yep.
Bit of web design. Apparently Adobe is having a CS6 roadshow, which for some reason I didn't know about.
Mm. I knew about it because they've been emailing me for weeks.
I must have escaped their mailing list.
Yeah, well done.
So there is a creative roadshow. I think you can just get to it from adobe.co.nz. It's on Tuesday the 17th in Auckland. I'll be there, so you know that's totally worth visiting.
Parsley 72 has a New Zealand flag icon next to his name in the chat room. I am jealous of this. I have no flags of any kind, not even a pirate flag or a Apache flag, which people would misinterpret.
adobe.com/nz/special/CS6 Roadshow if you care.
Let me tell you what I think about Adobe CS6. Certainly, Photoshop.
Have you used any of it yet?
Yep. Yep.
Are you using it regularly at work, or is it just something you've toyed with?
Yep. It is so good.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I want to get into for the, like, you know, literally my job, the video stuff that I do, mainly After Effects. Mm. So I haven't pushed the button on the upgrade yet, but I'm keen to go along and see for myself what things have changed.
Delighted that I did. Tell you what.
Possibly the opportunity of talking to someone from Adobe next week. We just have to find if we can find the right angle to talk to them about, because we don't want them to tell you that there's a new Photoshop. You know that.
If we can talk to that guy that does the demo of Unblur, I would love that, except he only talks in like ones and zeros, because that guy is probably he's just a computer.
That's one of those little technology previews I had. I remember when I saw.
But you know it's going to come.
I know, because they did Content Aware Phil. Do you remember seeing the technology preview for Content Aware Phil? And you're like, that doesn't make any sense. That can't do the thing that it says it can
do.
Sometimes.
Never. It takes me hours to do that. No way can that thing just do it. No way! Content Aware Phil is one of the things that I have been... I think that's been around since 5.5. I don't know what has specifically changed in 6 in terms of that. Tell you what, though, two things have made a big difference to me in Photoshop. One is... what's it called? It's called, like, Selection Refinement.
Oh, yeah.
And that is just... It's just brilliant. It's just sliders that adjust the edges of your
selection. That's
very
helpful.
And it's so clean. You know,
for getting rid of those nasty little... Just the teeny hint of white... White fringing you get on the end of your selection or whatever, that's a good idea.
Exactly. It's so good. And then the various tools that use, you know, things like the Content Aware Fill, the patch tool, and the whatever brush and so on. So amazing. These things are amazing. If you go back in time about 17 years, do you remember there was a show called Beyond 2000? They had a segment. Exactly. They had a segment about, you know, photo manipulation, possibly using Photoshop and like scrubbing out scratches and stuff. Now, I mean, obviously we've been able to do that since.
It was longer than 17 years because I remember the first version of Photoshop I used was in 1995, and that was like Photoshop 3.
Right.
So, but I also remember from Beyond 2000 them showing a CD-ROM and that it could hold this entire Encyclopedia Britannica.
Amazing.
And it was only 5 inches. It was like a larger version of a CD-ROM.
That's what cheese. What? What?
It was smaller than a Laserdisc, but bigger than a CD-ROM. It was like a 5-inch version of a CD-ROM.
So, in the chat room, we've just had the D-Blur thing posted, the little demo. It's on YouTube. Just go and look for the Adobe D-Blur. It has not made it into CS6 that I can find. I think that's probably going to be a 7, 8, or 9. But, geez, it's amazing. It's so amazing.
If you do video stuff, you'd be quite astounded because there's also, in After Effects now, there's a full 3D camera tracker, which is, you know, that's stuff you were paying crazy money for before, and it's built right into After Effects now.
Because I've used the 2D tracker. I mean, I guess, you know, whatever was the previous tracker. And that was amazing to do simple stuff, you know? I mean,
but it becomes complicated as soon as the camera perspective changes. So this one, you don't have to pick points anymore. It just looks at the whole image, tracks random points, and figures out parallax and things like that to determine, to determine three-dimensional camera movement. It's nuts.
One of the tools that puts, you know, amazing power into the hands of independent producers.
And not so independent producers. It's the sort of tool that I, you know, will find a use for every other week.
Yeah, but I mean, your production company probably could afford to do it the expensive way.
No, they wouldn't though. It would be hard for me to justify the infrequency with which we'd need to use it. Would be hard for me to justify the cost of it in addition to the tools we already have. But that's fine. Mm. Cool. Anyway,
I love
that's cool.
Motion tracking because, I mean, I've only done a little bit of that stuff, but it's so fun. It's so rewarding.
Can be lots of fun with what you can turn out with it.
Have you seen in the show notes the little scene we're gonna read, the Shakespeare scene we're going to read?
I saw the link. Shall I open it up?
You should open it.
Actually.
I've decided that I will be V.
I'm just clicking on it now.
I will be V and you can be J, and you'll very quickly see why I've chosen that. It's because I get to talk more.
Are we doing which one? The whole scene?
Yeah, I reckon. All the way through.
The top bit. Oh, the top bit and the bottom bit?
Yep. So whenever
you're V and I'm J, is that it?
That's right. But we're not doing it now. We're gonna do it in a little
bit.
We're gonna do it in a little bit. Have you chosen a word for Urban Dictionary Discourse Weekly Show? I pushed a button and nothing happened. Nothing could possibly go wrong. And then the very first thing.
Genius.
Do you hear all those sounds? That's error DS get status. I'm going to have to do that for every single sound in the soundboard and then restart the soundboard app. And then after all of that.
Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Well worth it.
Oh, that sounded good.
Well worth it.
So, do you want to do it now, this Urban Dictionary Word of the Week? Shall we just get it over with?
I mean, we can do this show in whatever order we like.
Well, I've got two words picked, so I'm going to get you to go heads or tails.
We're going to do both. We're going to do one now and one later.
Urban Dictionary, Word of the Week.
Okay, well, your heads. First Urban Dictionary Word of the Week, Morgan, is scrivener.
I know exactly what that is, and I think it's quite clear to everyone. A scrivener is something you get when you go to a place like Eiffel Tower or Leaning Tower of Pisa. Or Statue of Liberty is on, I think, Liberty Island. You go there and you get, you know, your little keepsake, your little memento. Yep. And it turns out to suck. And I think a scrivener is when you get one of those. Either you get it yourself and you make a mistake in the one you choose. Or it's like my mother went to Las Vegas and all I got was this stupid T-shirt. Maybe a scrivener is something you give away. I don't know. Maybe I should I commit to one of those? Have I been too broad? Anyway,
well,
that's a
scrivener. Not enough. I would come up with my guess. I like where you were headed with that. I thought you were going to go with you go to somewhere like the Eiffel Tower or the Statue of Liberty and you take a screw.
Right. And then once enough people have done it, the whole thing goes down. I mean, it's a limited edition, right? It's a collector's item.
I think so, yeah. They should be numbered. They might not be. No.
Am I not correct?
Scrivener you pay way too much for.
You're all
None
wrong.
Of those are connect.
Oh, what is it really?
A scrivener is anything you keep, whether stolen or given to you, from someone's house after you've slept with them.
Oh.
Laura didn't really like doing it with Chip so much, but she did nab a copy of Time magazine with Mick Jagger on the front from his house as a scrivener. Strange example.
You know what? I lost a scrivener with a girl I didn't even have sex with. I lost the thing, and I wasn't the screw. I was just the sucker that lost my cool. I had an Excite. Do you remember Excite, the search engine? I had a really cool Excite T-shirt. Do you remember when, just before the first dot-com boom and bust, people would like to send out T-shirts, and they didn't seem to care about where you were in the world.
So I had an Excite one.
They sent me an Excite T-shirt, and it was real cool. And this hot girl from up north liked it. Even though I wasn't hooking up with her, I let her wear it, and then she disappeared with the fucking thing. I wasn't the guy.
I'm not sure what that is.
I wasn't the guy. It wasn't me.
No.
She took a scrivener from my mate. Oh, God, it's pretty terrible to not remember an old friend's name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Josh Martelli was hooking up with her. He's a Te Awamutu / Hamilton lad. And he came up and he hung out with us heaps because he's an awesome dude. And he stayed at my place. And he hooked up with this goddamn out of Auckland girl who stole my T-shirt. Scrivener.
That is shocking.
Scrivener, you've got to take something of his, lady. God damn it.
She may have as well. You don't know. I mean, she might have also pilfered his Ask Jeeves T-shirt.
Could be. Oh, man, I wish I had an Ask Jeeves T-shirt. And a Lycos T-shirt. That'd be cool with the dog. People forget about the dog.
Lycos. See, there's this. I remember Ask Jeeves and AltaVista. I'd forgotten about Lycos and Excite.
AltaVista was great. I think, did AltaVista have some kind of image search thing?
No, maybe. AltaVista was the Google before Google was the Google. It was the search engine that actually found things.
Yeah. Well, I found Ask Jeeves was the one that I was using immediately before I went to Google, and I couldn't see why I'd want to change. I was extremely happy with Ask Jeeves. I'd say, Jeeves, I accidentally the whole bottle. Should I be talking to my doctor? And Jeeves would say, accidentally what? And I'd say, exactly, the whole bottle. and would continue like that. It was like a 1930s comedy skit.
15 Excellent. Minutes.
Hello, Illuminatus, by the way, in the chat room. It was very... you were raised right, I can tell, by your parents. You're a very polite person. You said hello, everybody, and I'm saying hello back. Not really in the chat room, more kind of in Mixlr. Did you know, if you're listening in Mixlr and you're not in the chat room, you should definitely go to discourse.co.nz/live, because there is the chat room, and you can talk with the other people who are listening to the show. And you can comment if you're just listening in Mixlr. That works just fine. But discourse.co.nz/live, it's even better. Hey, do you want to do some news?
Okay. I've got very little.
You know, I've got... Oh, man.
You've got lots.
Look, you set that one up. That was such a softball that I didn't even see it go by. You've got very little. Come on now. You got enough that you made 3 kids using it. So that's something.
I don't think you think that we're talking about what I think we're talking about.
The amount of news. I thought that amount of news you had was related directly, inversely proportional to your fertility.
No, it's just about how much research you did during the week and bothered to put in the document, but that's fine.
Funny story, actually. I'm going to skip ahead from the first one to this one. Oh, wow, awesome. The first one that I skip ahead to, that's the one where that Chrome tab is dead. This is on /. Samsung blames... Now, you would have heard a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, last week maybe, someone said, my Samsung Galaxy S3 burst into flames, and look at it. This is terrible. Well, guess what?
I see.
Samsung have done some research, and it's been revealed on /, and whatever the original article was. I can't be bothered clicking through. The headline is, Samsung blames Galaxy S3 burn on external energy source. Now, let me tell you what happened. This mother...
He plugged it into the mains.
No. He got it wet, and then he tried to dry it in his microwave, and the microwave set the battery alight, and then he tried... I guess he then realized that he'd screwed his phone, and he wanted to get a fixed phone, so he just said it spontaneously caught fire. But this was a big story all around the world, because Samsung, I think, are now the biggest manufacturer. I mean, they've eclipsed everyone else. They're certainly the biggest Android, and I think Android is bigger than anything else right now. So this was a big story. Oh, my God, Samsung's new flagship Android phone spontaneously catches light. Well, guess what? It didn't. It was in a microwave, because this munter dropped his phone in the toilet.
That's not surprising.
It's not surprising. Hello. Oh, I can see children. Hello, children.
Just one child.
One plural. Whatever.
It's a very small one.
Anyway, this is hilarious. So the guy has...
Who thinks you can dry a phone by microwaving it? I don't understand.
Same sort of person who thinks you can dry a poodle by microwaving it.
You can dry a poodle by microwaving it. That actually works.
Mm. Yeah. Anyway, the guy who was making the claim about this phone has retracted his claim now. Did he think they weren't going to look at it? This is a huge story. This could have led to hundreds of millions of dollars recall. Obviously, they were going to look at it. Anyway, have you got any news? I love that story.
The only
news
I've managed to gather is the shocking revelation that the Labour Party is the party of niggers.
Whoa now. Just a second.
Corrections.
I am essentially lost for words. There are very few words that make me this uncomfortable.
Sorry, let me be more clear. Mm-hmm. Labour are nigger lovers.
Corrections.
Let me read on for you. It'll help you.
God. Okay.
Ever wondered why the Labour Party is so loudly opposed to apartheid?
No.
Ever wondered why lazy, good-for-nothing Maoris and Islanders are defended by the Labour Party? Mm. Ever wondered why the Labour Party want more Kenyan wogs let into the country? I'm not sure why that would be wogs, not
Kenyan
niggers.
Kenyan wogs? Mm. I thought wogs
Ever wondered
were Indians.
Why the Labour Party side with the Viet Cong? Because they're soft on niggers of any colour. Brown niggers, black niggers, yellow niggers.
Oh, my God. I cannot believe that you're persisting with this. Are you trying to take my crown?
Yeah.
Next week, you're going to have to be the big mouth, I'm going to be the lost for words guy.
Astonishing discovery. Someone's discovered in a magazine from the 1970s, apparently, a full-page ad that says essentially just the things I've read. It also says vote national and has a big picture of, who are they? One of them is Muldoon. Who's the other one? I can't remember who the other one is. He was standing for Prime Minister in 1972 anyway.
I want to distract everyone from the appalling language that we've used that is topical and relevant, so I think we have to allow it. Pete McManus on Twitter. This is your shout out. How are you doing? There you go. All you got to do is ask. Holla. Is that what you say? Holla?
Just as this has been discovered, it's been widely circulated. All educated guesses are that it's not true because no one would publish an ad that says that, even in 1972, in fact. Yeah, no, just not going to happen.
The speculation
now is that it's...
Yeah.
What do you think? Is it a modern fake?
Or I think it's an old fake.
A genuine historic fake?
I think it's an old fake, but I asked about it on Twitter, I guess, yesterday. Did it come out yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much yesterday it started circulating.
And Kevin Long pointed out a few links to photoforensics.com and pointed out some problems with the kerning. And also Jack Yan, @JackYan, who is a typographer, said that there were some problems with the type of typeface that was used. Now, I don't know if it means that it can't have been made in the 70s. Or if it means it can't have been made when it was claimed to have been made in the 70s. Because the claim is that it was for the... When was the election?
1972 general election, was it?
So this is an ad from, well, probably 72, 71, 72. I just think it seems too far over the line, even for the time. That word...
No, there's no way. No way people... And there's no way people would have said that then and it wouldn't have come out. What's that?
It's not really a New Zealand word. It's not a word that racists here used. Now, some, you know, the modern Christchurch skinheads might use that word. But I don't feel like that's a word that historical New Zealand racists have used.
No, I don't think it's a word that was ever going to be acceptable.
Yeah.
I feel like
it's more likely that New Zealand racists would have said, like, bunga or coconut stupid words like that are still racist and offensive, but have a little bit less baggage along with them, I think. I mean, it's easier to laugh off coconut, I think.
It just doesn't seem like a campaign that would ever be made. So the two theories that I've heard is, one is it's a modern fake. Someone's whacked it together and folded it to paper to make it look a bit old and photographed it, which is possible. And the other is that it was actually published in a student magazine in the 1970s as a, you know, the type of thing that your Crackhams or your Salients might do.
Yeah.
And that someone's come across it and photographed it. I don't think it's easy to tell either way. I'm not sure. I haven't read the typography arguments, but there's nothing about it. Having seen a lot of advertisements from the 1970s, I've got a whole book of them somewhere, nothing about it seems wrong to me. In terms of just looking at it, in terms of the way it was, you know, the way it's been designed.
That Te Ara one, that's just been posted in the chat room with a link to what appears to be a verified national advert.
Yeah.
The typography is better in the real one than in the fake one. The kerning is very, very clean. Someone quite skilled has done it. And the labour are blah, blah, blah. The kerning is terrible. It's shocking. So I think that actually, if it was legit, it would look better.
Yeah. I think it's been made as a parody of that legitimate one, to be honest.
Yeah. National will not be blackmailed into cancelling the Springbok tour. Vote National. Man for man, the strongest team. God
so
damn.
Anyway, that's something that's interesting. I don't know if we'll find... Actually, the other thing that's notable about that for me is that the quality of the photographs in the original are a lot better than the quality of the photographs in the other one. Like, they've been duplicated further times that actually degrades it. Anyway, there you go. So that was interesting. I saw it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we need to fake up policy to criticise any political party. You should criticise them for what they really say, not for what they didn't say.
I think there's completely almost no value in criticising a political party for things they did 40 years ago.
Or especially for things that they didn't do 40 years ago.
Yes, exactly. For things that you perceive they did 40 years ago.
Yeah, it's too long ago. Now, 1980s and 90s, I think, are probably still fair game.
Even 80s, I think, questionable. The political landscape in New Zealand has changed a lot since then.
Yes, it has. 90s, but Labour did a lot of things then that that National is still using to justify their behaviour. When Labour went completely insane, loony.
Well, I mean, it's for that reason that the 80s aren't really useful to look upon, because that was one of the things that National was saying about the asset sales. Well, you supported this in the 80s. It's like, well, yeah, but that wasn't, really the same political party.
Yeah, it was a party that doesn't. But the trouble is that there are people around now, I mean, who were in the Labour Party in Parliament then. I mean, there are some old bees around who, you know, they do actually have to answer some of those questions, I think, about how they could possibly have ever justified their, you know, some of the decisions they made, some of the terrible decisions they made. So another thing that needs to be justified, Masterton man, you know, the age of inquiry, some people say maybe it's over. You know, CERN and the Large Hadron Collider notwithstanding, some people say, you know.
Well, there's still a little bit of space exploration to be done, I think. Maybe we need to know a bit more about what's deep under the sea. But I think, yeah, generally, we've just found all the important things we need to know.
We just want oil. This guy, though, he has verified scientifically that a nail gun can pierce a human skull.
Now, no way.
He did empirical testing of this by putting it up to his forehead and pulling the trigger. And to his surprise, a nail gun can pierce a human skull, and he did lose the sight in one eye.
I am...
And he did walk to hospital, and he was laughing when he got there.
Well, you would be, wouldn't you? I am surprised, frankly, that it did pierce the skull. I didn't think it would.
Yeah,
that's why I've done that many times.
Oh, my. I mean, is your skull, is that the first bone that you test? I mean, I would have thought that, like, maybe your forearm would come ahead of the skull.
Yeah.
Maybe
doesn't say what sort of nail gun it was. Like, maybe it was just a framing gun. Maybe it was just a attacking gun. Maybe it wasn't like a full-size nail gun.
Yeah.
Maybe the small ones.
Maybe it was. You could be right, but, you know... This scientist, though, I appreciate the work he did. He's as good as those Nazis were in the 30s and 40s, testing whether Jews could still see if you stitch their eyelids shut and so on.
Right.
This is that level of science. Oh, God. Sorry, I should probably... just a second.
Corrections.
You know, the Nazis did a lot of terrible things. I don't know that they ever stitched anyone's eyelids shut and then tested to see if they could still see.
That you need to apologise to Nazis.
But you never know. I mean, as we said about criticising National for things they didn't do, maybe don't criticise the Nazis for things they didn't do. I mean, they did herd, you know, an awful lot of people into the showers and murder them.
Yeah.
And, you know, on an industrial scale. You know, it's the first time anyone's ever done it, hopefully the last. So maybe I don't need to invent additional atrocities for them to have committed. I mean,
they're pretty good on their own. I wouldn't worry about it too much. I don't think you need to create new ones, but I also don't think you need to apologize for the ones you've just created or dwell on them.
Something I probably should apologize for. Here's another correction.
Corrections.
You know, a couple of weeks ago when we spoke about Trasha Tolly, who came after Crush Collins, they crushed the first boy racer car. It's a Nissan Laurel, and I was like, why didn't you sell it, you idiots? You could have made some money out of it. Well, guess what? They sold the crushed car.
Genius.
And they sold it to Motat for 818 smackaroonies, which, you know, probably a bargain, actually. Good deal.
Yeah. On Trade Me it was sold.
Yeah.
No less. So anyone could have bought that, potentially.
Anyone. And the proceeds went to Youthline, which is really cool.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I guess, given that you have children, you probably go to Motat quite a bit. Or are you more of a zoo family?
Family pass.
Right.
We can go to Motor anytime we want. We've also got family passes to the zoo. We can go there anytime we want as well.
Man, that zoo's good. That zoo's good, but don't go into the meerkat tunnels.
No, they're stinky and small.
Yeah, it smells like wee in there.
I don't like crawling.
It smells like wee in there now. I mean, unless they wash it up since I was last there. I got startled, though. I didn't know those little rats would be up so close to my face.
No, yeah, you gotta watch that.
Have you got any more stories? I've got a story.
It's good news. I wrote something else in there.
It's good news for everyone who hasn't got a house yet. Maybe. I mean, predicting the future, housing bust could be looming, which I tell you what, you know, as a renter, I would quite like there to be a housing bust. I think it'd be great to you know, pick up the pieces.
Minutes.
You know, the pieces.
You know, the problem with the housing bust is then we'll be subjected to news story upon news story of the housing bust.
Yeah.
Mind you, I suppose if there's a housing boom, we get subjected to news story upon news story of the housing boom. And quite frankly,
I'm over
no
it.
One can really afford to buy a house now anyway.
Yeah, I think the people that can have already done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, shocking.
There was a story in the Herald I saw the other day that's shocking. Apparently, renting a house doesn't necessarily cover the costs of actually owning that house.
Oh, I'm counting on that because, I mean, I couldn't have bought the penthouse, but I can easily rent it.
Exactly.
So, I mean, someone else has to deal with the shortfall, and I'm very happy for them to do so because, you know, I love the place. Very happy here. But actually, our lease is, I think, just about due, so we might look at moving. I don't know. But we can do that so easily. We don't have to wait for a sale, you know, nervously, or worry about a bust. We can just go wherever we want.
Although, there's no rental houses left in Auckland. Too bad. You'll have to go to...
Is that actually true? I've never had a problem finding a place.
No, I don't know. There's always, like, when you dig into those stories, it's always like, yes, Susie P. Homemaker couldn't find a house she wanted to rent that meet her criteria. That's right. She wants 5 bedrooms in an inner city suburb for $500 a week.
Right. Well, best of luck, Susie.
Yes. That's the gist of it. I got another story. Remember that Charles Carrion chap? Carrion?
Yeah, that mad asshole.
He withdrew his lawsuit.
No!
Finally. Which actually is a good thing and a bad thing. One is, the good thing is he's no longer suing
a
relatively innocent cartoonist and 2 charities.
Yep.
And the state attorney general and some other people.
100 John Doe's.
But the problem I have with him withdrawing the lawsuit is now that he can't be dragged across the coals for his ridiculous use of the law as a weapon.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing. Also, of course, the fundraising finished. We told you, I think it was $220,000 he raised. So about $9,000 of that ended up being fees paid to Indiegogo as for their fundraising services.
Mm.
The other $211,000 was donated to the charities, and Matthew Inman, the oatmeal, took photos of the money as promised and posted it with the framed drawing of the beer loving to Charles Carrion on behalf of Funny Junk, I believe.
Yeah.
Now, there you go.
One detail photos
that on his website.
And it's hilarious because he writes out words and stacks of cash. And exactly. And it's cool. It's exactly what he said to do. But I have a feeling that is not the donated money. I think that
no, apparently a lot of the donated money had already gone.
Yeah.
So presumably that was money he either borrowed or had and withdrew and then put back in his bank account before sending checks and whatever else he needed to do.
Now, obviously, I'm not an accountant or any kind of professional, in fact. I have a feeling that he would have had some tax obligations if he had actually had that money and taken it out. I don't think he ever wanted that to be income, given that it was immediately given to charity. I think if you had to pay tax on $200,000, I think that would hurt quite badly, even though I imagine you would get some write-offs for the charitable giving. I don't know.
They wouldn't quite balance out.
No. So, I mean, that would suck a little bit, you know, but, you know, I guess he sells a lot of T-shirts. I don't know.
Well, that was one of the points that Carrion made in one of his lawsuit allegations was that that Inman would unfairly get a tax benefit for the donation.
If he claims it.
Well, the lawyers for Indiegogo pointed out that that may be the case, but it would be terribly offset by the massive increase in income for the same tax year.
That Carrion guy is a dickhead.
Yes.
And I bet a lot of lawyers are champing at the bit to destroy him.
Well, I would imagine his reputation is certainly destroyed now, and God forbid you ever try and Google his name as a prospective client now.
You'd have to be mad.
He's pretty much sunk himself. I imagine he'll be suing other people now to get that stuff removed from the internet.
Yeah.
You know, think people like the Associated Press and Wired Magazine and Google.
Well, best of luck to him. I mean, I really, given that it's all
by
been
baby, sorry.
Given that the whole thing's been withdrawn, it's kind of funnier than it was when probably it could have still been stressful. Now, I believe that the way he withdrew it, he can actually bring the friggin' thing back anytime he likes. So there's still going to be some stress for some of these people, I imagine. But
I would actually like to see some of the people sue him for abusive, whatever he's abused.
Well, and I wonder, what do you have to do to get disbarred? What do you have to, how abusive do you have to be? Oh, hello. Well, this is our senior toddling correspondent.
He's not even toddling correspondent. He's a senior crawling correspondent, really.
Let's see, where's my button?
He's just gonna hit things.
That's a proving bell.
He's mostly interested in hitting the microphone, not so much talking.
And breathing.
Well, he doesn't talk.
He breathes.
Not even really any interesting gurgling noises.
Slightly less than Ben into the microphone. Now, I discovered that, so I always thought that disapproving small bell, that one, I always thought that was our creation, but then I watched Spellbound. Have you seen Spellbound? This is a documentary about the US Spelling Bee competition.
Yes.
And if you hear the bell, it means you made a mistake. So there's a disapproving bell. So, I mean, there's like a historical, there's a thing.
Yay.
So it's not even original. Fuck.
We're not crazy.
Probably shouldn't have been excited about it. Things to be excited about, though, are when great big companies live up to their press. You know, Google says, don't be evil. That's our number one game. And then, you know, they make mistakes from time to time. Maybe they're a little bit scary with how much information they've got. Okay.
Yep.
Let's take that as read. But then when they say lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender rights are human rights, and they specifically say that as a corporation, and they don't just say, you know, internally we don't discriminate, but globally we're launching a campaign, and they call it Legalize Love, to pressure governments into recognizing and decriminalizing, where it's still criminalized, I think that you have to say they're definitely not being evil, and in fact they're being really good, and I hope that we see the same thing from other huge companies like Microsoft and Apple.
I'm often a little bit surprised at the companies that do take a stand on this, because it is, I mean, it's not controversial in the sense that I don't think anyone who listens to this show would consider it controversial, but there are people who find this sort of thing controversial, to the extent that the Oreos campaign having rainbow filling, they had a picture with an Oreo with rainbow filling, became a boycotting issue.
Oh,
so I'm always slightly impressed when big companies do take this kind of stand, and I think it is perhaps a lot more significant from a PR perspective than we realise, because it is anything that's potentially polarising or controversial is a hell of a thing for a company to do.
Yeah.
So where are they starting this campaign?
Actually, I think they are starting it most specifically in Singapore, where homosexuality, male homosexuality, certainly, and maybe not lesbian. Lesbian stuff might not even be recognised. Male homosexuality is illegal. They're also looking at Poland, where they don't recognise same-sex couples, which is, you know, further down the line. We should be, I think, ashamed of ourselves. At least we have civil unions, but we should have just done marriage.
Yeah.
Marriage, you know, it shouldn't matter what the gender is of, you know, the people involved. You know, whether, you know, however you recognise your own gender shouldn't matter. However you were born shouldn't matter. But then, I mean, you do eventually get into the question of how many people should be able to be in a marriage. And I mean, you know, I think, and from a civil liberties point of view, maybe there shouldn't be a limit. I don't see why there has to be a limit. But unfortunately, in places where they say, you know, you can have multiple wives or multiple husbands, usually it's multiple wives, because, you know, most places are patriarchal. It tends to work out pretty poorly for young men. Because old men seem to take a lot of control of things, and they also tend to be, you know, territories where female human rights are not respected very well. So, you know, you've got to
Thought of that aspect of it. But I mean, it's pretty simple. From, you know, you can quite easily say that a marriage is a among other things, a legal contract between two people, two individuals. And you know, it's not hard to draw that line.
Yeah, but there are a lot of countries where the line is not drawn. There are a lot of countries, mainly Middle Eastern countries, where, you know, it's a man and I think usually up to maybe three women, you know, basically as many as you can afford
as long as they're not being greedy.
But it is greedy because, you know, the birth rate is roughly 50-50. So, you know, if one rich dude has three wives, then two poorer dudes have no wives. Now,
gay guys and bachelors, it all works out.
Does it?
No.
Because there are in Mormon communities, there's a thing, I can't remember any of the terms. There's stories I've read over the years, mainly on Metafilter, about, you know, some of these small towns in, what's that state?
Utah,
usually in Utah, a small town where, you know, they follow the legal rules, but really they do have marriages. And what they do is they actually kick young men out. They send them away when they come of age. Can you take the our senior toddling correspondent and kick him the fuck out of the studio?
I can't really. But no.
All right. Well, at least point his face away from the microphone. We're going to exclude him when he comes of age. I tell you what, if he thinks he's getting a wife, he's got another thing coming. What's his name? I can never remember. Is it Joshua?
This one's Cassidy.
That's Cassidy.
Joshua's in bed. He's a good boy.
Is Cassidy going to grow up to be a gunfighter?
Well, I'm not going to rule it out.
It might be a good thing if he grows up to be a gunfighter if you know, the whole world is overrun by zombies. It might be very handy to have a gunfighter around.
It's always very handy to have a gunfighter.
not always. I mean, sometimes you just want a peaceful life. Have you got any more stories?
He doesn't have to be gun fighting all the time. I've got nothing else. Nothing.
I've got heaps.
Not a sausage.
I've got heaps, but this one from offsettingbehavior.blogspot.co.nz is not loading right. Now, so alcohol action. This is more about the minimum alcohol pricing thing, which Labour have very unwisely...
I'm willing to comment on your stories.
Yeah. Labour have very unwisely decided that minimum alcohol pricing is something that they want to do. This is just like their stupid brain fart on GST, removing GST from fresh fruits and vegetables and so on. It was idiotic, and it meant.
Did we talk about this last week?
Yes, we did. But more has happened on this. There's an anti-alcohol advocacy group called Alcohol Action New Zealand, and they put out a press release about a Canadian study that they said showed that a 10% increase in the minimum price of alcohol reduces consumption by 16%.
That's ridiculous.
Well, it is ridiculous.
I've seen studies that support that a minimum price will reduce consumption, but the numbers I've seen were higher than that, and the reduction was like 3%.
Yeah.
I don't think it solves the problem that it's aimed to solve. Has Labour been any more specific about what it is they want to actually do with the implementation?
No, like they haven't. It turns out that internally, within the party, there is dispute over what the level should be. So obviously it's not based on any kind of research, or they just know what level it should be. The scientists would have said, we've done the study and this is what it should be. But anyone who's done the research has said, you know, if you actually what this Canadian study said, I think if you increased it by 10%, it reduced consumption by something like 3%. So it's nothing like what these, what these wowsers would like to claim. And in fact, the Canadian study said that if you increased the minimum price. Instead of buying a $10 bottle of wine, which would increase to, let's say, actually this is a John Key quote, so I'm a little bit nervous about this, but instead of buying a $10 bottle of wine that might go to $15 minimum price, instead they buy a $5 bottle previously that is now $10. So they're still spending the same amount, but they're getting shit. So, I mean, the thing is, how much charge for shitty booze?
So I wrote a whole thing on this on my blog.
Yeah.
DylanReeve.whateverthehellitisposterous.com, I think. Anyway. Based on the comment that was made by Charles Chevelle about it, which was you might be paying $14, $15, $16 for a bottle of wine. And previous comments made by Leanne Dalziel.
Yeah.
Was that we were looking maybe at $2 per standard drink.
Mm.
Which would work out about that, because most bottles of wine are about 6 standard drinks.
Yeah.
6-7 standard drinks. So that added to $12-$14.
Yeah.
Which means, you know, if you impose a minimum alcohol purchasing price, then it has to be based on standard drinks, because what the hell else would you base it on, unless you come up with some ridiculously complicated, you know, alcohol level plus type of alcohol plus something plus point of sale, I don't know. So if you say $2 per standard drink, that's fine. That just means there's no alcohol anymore that's cheaper than, you know, $14 for 7 standard drinks. So it's what a bottle of wine costs, or it's what, you know, now an 8% bourbon and Coke is going to cost you $4 instead of $2.50.
Mm.
But, you know, what is it? I don't see what that achieves. If the point is that people are apparently going out and getting drunk, preloading before they go out to town.
Yep.
Then they were buying what? A bottle of wine before and getting drunk. Like a bottle of wine is enough to get
drunk. Or a bottle of whatever. Or a case of whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, or a few cans of whatever. And so maybe they were spending $6, $8 before, $10 if they, you know, depending on what they were buying and how cheap it was. Now they're spending $15, $16, $20.
Yeah.
I don't think that's enough to change behaviour.
No, neither. Because it's still cheaper than what they pay in the bar, so they'll still do it. And it's still uncontrolled.
And so all it's going to do is put the price of everything else up.
Yeah.
The people, and it would be interesting to know, I've seen some bits of some of those studies, it would be interesting to know a bit more about in the places where the reduction of alcohol consumption is happening, where that reduction is happening.
Yeah. Well, now, one thing I do like that was proposed by, I don't even remember who, probably a moonbat who usually don't agree with, was having a distinction between the legal purchasing age at an off-license versus
off-license pricing.
So if you were at Liquorland, you had to be 20, but if you were at a bar, you had to be
18.
You could be 18. And that would mean that someone there was looking at you and deciding whether you're too pissed or not, which is supposed to be their job now. Of course, some bars don't get it right, but it's supposed to be their job now. You're not meant to serve people who are already in
the That was certainly a popular proposal.
And I mean, it's also complicated, but it's not as stupid as making me pay more for the odd fucking drink that I want to have when I'm not a problem drinker. I just shout on the internet after a few drinks. I don't go drive. I can't even start my car because I always walk. The battery's dead. I'm very safe when I've had a drink. I hardly beat up anyone's wife. I'm not even married.
That's the solution.
Not even married, but just you wait until I... Yeah. You know what is... we probably actually should crack on because we've got about 14 minutes left and there's a few things to get through. So I've got more stories about Daniel Tosh from Tosh.0 with his stupid rape culture joke. He said about
what's the joke? I'll tell you what the joke.
He was making a joke about rape.
Yeah.
And a woman in the audience heckled him and said, "What are you doing?" And so then he said, "Wouldn't it be funny if that girl got raped by like five guys right now? Like right now? What if a bunch of guys just raped her?" And that's what he said on stage to this woman who was criticizing him for making a stupid joke about rape. This, he really doubled down on the stupid. He has shamefacedly and insufficiently apologized on Twitter since. But what a fucking dickhead. Excuse me, I probably should have put a trigger warning on that in advance, but, you know, that stuff is still a little bit new to me. Anyway. So that is Daniel Tosh. Don't watch Tosh.0. That's your lesson, because fuck this guy. And you should be ashamed, anyone who employs that asshole. And that asshole, in a couple of years, maybe after he's had a timeout, he can come back.
It's interesting. I don't know much about this. I'm just reading the link you had where apparently the controversy's drawn Louis C.K. into it.
Yeah.
Somehow. Anyway. It's a delicate balance because, you know, you should be able to make jokes about things that on the face of them aren't funny, but that sort of thing directed to an audience member, that's not, you know, that's distinctly...
You know, I agree. And, you know, so there's a problem. You know, people rightly criticize comedians and others who make jokes or even just use the word retard because, you know, you're making a joke about, in some cases, you know, a person's intellectually impaired child. You know, that person will not find that very funny. But I have heard some pretty funny jokes about retards. I don't know if I've ever heard a funny rape joke, except Brendan Lovegrove's one, which was about raping a child, but not really, because it's just, you know, you rape it where the head used to be. See, so he's taking it so far beyond anything real that it's comes back to funny.
I think Louis C.K.'s jokes are a bit like that as well. Like, he makes quite a lot of similar kinds of jokes, but they're always, you know, they're going to such an absurd extent that it's not making light of things that actually happen.
Right. But this guy then saying that the audience should pack rape this woman is actually not making light. It's not making an outrageous, you know, beyond any sort of reality, so it's funny thing. He's saying something that actually could be quite terrifying for a woman. And obviously she was offended already. And, you know, hecklers, maybe you should, you know, shut the fuck up, heckler. But he got this so badly wrong. And he's meant to be a professional. So anyway, so there's that. Unless you have anything else to say about that, I think we should move on.
I'll get nothing.
And get cracking, because we've got about 11 minutes to do everything. Let's do, very quickly, because it's easy.
What's your auntie been talking about?
And the reason it's easy is that we're going to talk about the newsroom again. How do you feel about the newsroom, Dylan?
I still like it. I don't know what the hell everyone's problem with it is. to be quite honest. I enjoy watching it. I find things in it that are funny and interesting. I can't remember, there was a couple of lines in it that while watching it on my own recently made me actually laugh out loud.
Yeah. So there are a lot of critics don't like it. Right now on IMDb, it's running an 8.8, which means it is extraordinarily good, according to IMDb.
That's interesting.
I guess there's been three episodes, and I am really enjoying it, except for one thing, and that is there's one actress who I just don't think she's very good. I can't remember her name. Mackenzie on the show?
The English producer woman.
The English sounding. The American, raised in England, whatever her backstory is. I don't think she can act. So everything that she says, it sounds like she's currently reading it off a prompter. And that is okay for us doing an election show, although we actually didn't do that.
Yeah.
But that is not okay for someone who is acting as, you know, pretending to be a real person in a fictional drama show. Everything she says sounds a bit wooden. So, but aside from her, I think that there are a bunch of great performances, and I'm enjoying the story, and obviously they haven't quite found their legs yet, and I think it's great, and I don't really understand quite what the criticism is. Oh, well, here
no,
we go.
Neither do I.
Well, here's a really good example. Kevin Long in the chat room has done the research that we should have done. Metacritic, for professional critics, rates at 57 out of 100.
So it's about 5.7 then, theoretically?
Right. Out of 10.
If we put it to a 10,
and yep. For users, it's 8.3 out of 10. So it's, let's say, 83% versus 57%. But I say, you know, I'm going with the users, the viewers, the actual audience. This show, I mean, I think they had their peak audience, their peak ratings. What's it called? Market share? No, what's it called?
Well, share. Well, it depends on which one you're talking about.
They are still rising. I mean, I think they won their time slot. So they are doing what they need to do, and that is get people watching. But the thing is, you know, some of these criticisms that I've seen from people, you know, people talking about how their spin doctor mates think it's no good. And it's like, well, fuck your spin doctor mates. Who gives a shit what a spin doctor says?
Another note from the chat room, Jay Bardenz says, I like it. The third episode was better than the others. The main gripe I have with it is I find it too sensationalized. It almost makes out like they're heroes for doing a news program, which I think is entirely the point. Like the people in the West Wing were heroes for governing the way they did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably so right.
That's kind of, but that's fine. I enjoy watching it. I don't choose to read too much into it. Frankly, I watch it as not mindless entertainment, but I watch it as entertainment, and I don't choose to compare it to anything in the real world because it's not.
All right, so there's a new segment that I want to get into quickly, and we've only got a few minutes left, so I'm going to bang into this one. I don't have a stink for it, so I'm going to use... The new segment is Best of Lifehacker. And the Best of Lifehacker this week is prevent food and drinks from tasting minty and weird after you brush your teeth. So this is a problem that I've had. I don't know about you. Sometimes, you know, if you have a Coke.
Well, how about is it just don't eat and drink after you brush your teeth?
That is a solution. You brush your teeth and then you're like, okay, I've got to rush out of the house. I want to have a quick drink. So you grab some Coke or you grab an orange juice and you're like, oh God, that tastes awful. Their solution is to rinse your mouth. Thank you, Life Hacker. I never would have thought of that. And that is the best of Life Hacker for this week.
Who doesn't rinse their mouth after they brush their teeth?
I don't know. People who read Lifehacker don't. Lifehacker is for idiots. And anyway, best of Lifehacker for the week. Oh, congratulations, whoever wrote that insightful piece of genius wisdom. I really appreciate it. Have you got the our reading from Shakespeare?
Oh, yes, I do.
We don't have a sting for this either. So let's say something like,
we need some culture on the show. What do you know? Shakespeare's got it for us.
There was no rhymes there involved, really.
No, it was rubbish.
I got a random caller on the switchboard. and knowest thou what the French name cottage pie?
Say they not cottage pie in their own tongue?
But nay, their tongues for speech and taste alike are strange to ours. With their own history, Gaul knoweth not a cottage from a house.
What say they then, pray?
Hutchis Parmentier.
Hutchis Parmentier? What name they cream?
Cream is but cream, only they say la creme.
What do they name black pudding?
I know not. I visited no inn where it could be bought. But wait, For half my tale is yet untold. Were I to ask thee how the Hollanders do garnish their potatoes, wouldst say thus, the sweet, luxurious sauce of fair Mayon, with olive oil and creamy yolk of egg, well known as garnished meat for tubers, aye?
Is it not so?
God blind me if it were! The lowland men who must distracted be do grind up crimson nightshade and concoct a loathsome sauce, ketchup by name, which doth no doubt inflame their fevered brains anew, perpetuating their insanity.
God's truth, I can believe it not.
Oh, aye, and not a little do they thus employ, but rather the potatoes drown therewith.
'Tis an abomination, by my faith.
And scene.
Genius. That didn't sound... For some reason, that didn't quite sound like any Shakespeare I've heard before.
I mean, I can't say that I'm an expert on the matter, but the site does say pulp bard.
No, I can't say what else it would be then.
It's a translation from... Should I give away the secret?
No, I don't think so.
I'm not giving away the secret then. Maybe we'll do another one from Pulp Bard next week. Or maybe not. Maybe we'll do it from some other play. Some other.
Would you like your other Urban Dictionary word of the week now?
Where's my fucking cursor gone? Oh, there it is.
Urban Dictionary word of the week.
I'm going to give you a choice. Before we go ahead, you've got two words you can choose from.
Yeah, well, but you already gave me the choice. I'm choosing tails.
No, one is the word I've chosen, and one is the word you brought up earlier. Do you want to do double duty or face brag?
I want to do double duty.
All right, then. Tell me what double duty is.
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
This is when you use a particular part of the body for a purpose for which it is not usually used. For instance, let's use a commercial building as an example. Sometimes there's a tradesman's entrance or an outwards goods exit, and you use that for a different purpose. That is a double duty.
So remember when we had this trouble with the Urban Dictionary Word of the Week thing in the past?
Urban Dictionary! It made our show adult only! Yes.
Now, I want to warn you. See, we're nearly at the end of the show, so I want to warn you. If you're easily offended, perhaps now is the time to leave us. It's been nice talking to you.
Do you think you could try substituting any filthy words with synonyms that are not quite so filthy but are at least suggestive?
It's not the words that are the problem.
Okay, all right. Oh, God, just as long as it's not like wolf. What was it?
No, it's not that bad.
All right,
go on. It's not wolf blitzer.
Go on.
My wife is within earshot. This is going to be awkward. When a guy, double duty is when a guy puts on a strap-on dildo and proceeds to fuck a girl in both holes at the same time.
Oh my God.
Must go above the real penis. True double duty is pulled off when the dildo is in the vagina and the penis is in the anus when the girl is on her back.
Wait. Say that again, the last bit?
True double duty is pulled off when the dildo is in the vagina and the penis is in the anus when the girl is on her back.
Oh, okay. So the dildo is strapped on above the penis.
That's
correct. I guess that makes sense. I mean, I don't know why.
Yeah, where would you strap it on below the penis?
The other way around. Okay. Well, I mean, apparently...
you're all wrong.
And, you know, mea culpa. I liked my one, but their one sure is more over the top.
Face break was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
So good thing we didn't go there. Yeah. Probably. Maybe.
Yeah. Do we ever do things? We've got like a whole minute with which to play.
Well, we should read another really offensive word of the week then, shall we? I have none. Don't ask me to.
Listen to that.
Do you know, I'm curious, Morgan.
Yeah.
Do you want to be able to stream Hulu or BBC iPlayer, even though you're not currently in America or the UK?
Do I ever?
Okay, discourse.co.nz/VPN. No point taking up the last minute with an ad.
That sounds really expensive.
It's not. It's not that expensive.
discourse.co.nz/VPN for all your whatever you're doing needs. Jeez, the stings around here have really gone downhill.
Yeah, I think you need to get a new intern.
Yeah. Let me try. God damn it. Oh.
Hello.
Five.
Hello. I wanted to complain about that definition that you just had a few minutes ago.
Sure,
that's not real double duty.
Two.
One. Who was that? Hey, thank you for listening. I really love you guys. See you next
You're
week.
You're listening to The Weekly Show Bye. Sorry. Of course.
All right, we're using that one.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
We've never been better. am I wrong or am I right? We've never been better. Those new games, I think, are good.
Great. I enjoy the pulp bard. That was an interesting twist on the Shakespeare thing we discussed last week.
I should have said thank you to Kevin Long for suggesting that scene. I apologize, Kevin. I should have said it during the main show. Maybe that means we have to do. Well, it's pretty late. I don't think we can do an overflow.
Damn right.
Well, I'll just leave this on the end after the ha, 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 ha. Thank you, Kevin, for suggesting Pulp Bard. It was great. And maybe we'll do I really like the cafe scene, the what's it, pumpkin pie, that whole thing.
So
you motherfuckers move or I'm gonna execute every last one of you. That scene.
Motherfucking last one of you. Didn't have enough motherfuckers in there. Hey, if anyone else comes across any exciting Shakespeare but not Shakespeare things that we could read, that'd be cool.
All right, well, we definitely have to leave this on after the ha 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 then.
Okay, so we'll do another ha 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 now, just to truly end it.
Doesn't usually go like that.
Ha 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 ha. See, I just did it. It's done.
Usually it goes something like...
Fish and chips, fish and chips.
Sorry, this show is cancelled. Beep.